People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. I wonder if you know what a librettist in residence is. Well, Cape Town Opera have just appointed a newly appointed librettist in residence whose name is Alan Olenacek. And he is going to talk about things like writing librettos and also a project which Cape Town Opera has called Staging Stories, an incubator for new South African opera. So, Alan, welcome, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
I see that you're based in San Francisco.
Yes.
But where were you born? Where do you come from?
I was born in Milwaukee, which is just north of Chicago.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. And then how long have you been in San Francisco?
21 years. Yeah.
So it's your home.
It is my home, indeed.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll come back to all that and all the amazing things that you seem to be involved in.
Yeah.
But I'd like to know right at the beginning here, what is a librettist in residence? And I don't think Cape Town Opera has ever had one before.
No opera companies that I know of has ever had.
No opera company?
No.
In the world?
That I know of. I'd be interested to know.
Oh,
and there's no
goodness.
Historical precedent for it either.
Okay.
And so, yeah, it's a great honor.
I was going to say, how did it come about?
Well, as an artist, you have to sometimes be bold. So I just threw it out there. And Max Helena, the artistic director, was like, yeah, that's a great idea. And we'll run it past some people. And yeah, and then just several weeks ago, they came back to me and said,
this is Cape Town Opera.
Cape Town Opera said, oh, would you like to be a librettist in residence? I was like, yes, of course.
Did they give you a job description? I mean, what does a librettist do? Apart from writing librettos for operas.
Yeah. So, well, I write librettos mm-hmm. for new pieces. And then recently I've gotten into adaptations of older pieces.
Right.
And then for Cape Town Opera, I'm now mentoring and teaching playwrights to write for opera. It's a little different than writing for musicals or the stage.
And it must be very different, I would have thought.
It is very different. But I think once you wrap your mind around it, it's fine. It's learning how to centralize and boil everything down to its hard kernel
mm-hmm.
Because people don't come for opera to hear the words.
No, they don't.
They come for the music.
Exactly.
And so if you are conspicuous with your words, you're an overly poetic, you're sort of failing in my opinion, as a librettist, that you're there to support the music.
Yes.
You're not there to give everything over to the composer, but your job is to inspire them to create music.
To inspire the composer.
To inspire the composer to create music.
Does it usually happen that way around, or does a composer come to you and say, listen, I've got this idea, I've written a few themes and ideas, would you like to work with me on this?
Sometimes, but they're generally pretty awful.
Because
they're I say that, but certainly I've met composers that come up with incredible ideas, but there's this sort of this idea that we'll make that into an opera. It's like not all stories lend itself to opera, and so you have to be. And what makes a good story for opera is it's hard to say. It's hard to pin down.
Indeed. Here are two contrasts for you. If you think of Richard Wagner, mm-hmm. who wrote all his own librettos, really,
yes.
incredibly, because of his ego, apart from anything
else.
Oh,
yes. He didn't trust anybody.
No.
Yeah.
But then matched it so magnificently with the music.
Yeah.
And then on the other side of the spectrum, Gilbert and Sullivan, with the wonderful Gilbert and his incredible ability to write all forms of
oh
English,
my gosh, yeah.
from patter songs to limericks, and
yeah.
that, which Sullivan then set to music.
Yeah. Yeah.
I suppose it's an interesting thought. If you are a librettist, mm-hmm. it means that nothing actually exists until you've written something.
Correct. I mean, there are times when, you know, I'll see one of my premieres, I was like, you know, this didn't exist before. And
yes.
you're like, wow, I kind of made this happen.
Yeah.
And so really the librettists, You start with the story, start with story structure, move, build character, and then they set the text. Because the text, in the end, is less important than building a solid structure. But then you give it off to the composer, and then you hand it off to a director and the producer, and the singers embody it. And so you start it, but you have to let it go. Because opera is the most collaborative art form, and that means letting other people bring their expertise and their passion to the story as well.
Do you think opera is more collaborative than musicals?
I've attempted one musical, so I can't say. But I think so,
okay.
Yes. Yeah. What's interesting is Richard Rodgers said, he said, well, singers in musicals sing the words, and singers in opera sing the music.
Oh, that is interesting.
And I
that
thought,
is very interesting.
And it's sort of seared into my consciousness of like, this is how you approach opera. And that means stepping out of the way of your own words.
Do you then get commissioned to write a libretto, or do you come up with
lucky,
an idea?
If you're lucky.
If you're lucky.
Yeah, okay. If you want your heart broken, write an opera, get a composer to set it to music, and then pitch it to an opera company, because it's always no. That said, I've had incredible luck making it happen. So, but you don't get a commission for an opera until you have a commission, until you have an opera under your belt.
Okay.
Well, that means putting skin in the game and creating one if only it exists on the page.
Yes.
And so there's no real clear way into opera creation, even for composers. And sometimes we scratch our head and go, how do we make this happen? And a lot of it was just, it's good luck. It's good timing. It's meeting the right person who takes a risk on you and connects to the story. So
I'm just thinking while you're speaking about this, about Verdi and the various librettists he had, and how towards the end of his life, apparently, they really had to try very hard to sell him an idea. Otello, for example.
Oh, yes.
I mean, he really thought he'd retired and didn't want
anything
to do.
He was done.
But it was the libretto that made him...
He had a passion for
Shakespeare.
Yeah. And it was easy to kind of draw him back into opera.
With Shakespeare.
And Shakespeare. And I think he was not very successful with comedies. He wrote one.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the story?
Yes. It was around about the time his daughter died or something.
And his
like
wife.
It. And his wife, yes.
And he was not in a good mood to – not in the frame of mind to write a comedy. And it didn't do well.
So on top of all, and apparently he nearly gave up, and that was very early in his career.
Yeah, yeah. And then later on, he came up with Falstaff,
which is his last opera, and which is a masterpiece. Yeah. Isn't it interesting? It just shows what effect you librettists have on people.
Yeah, yeah.
Just on the subject of comedy, are your librettos all sorts of ideas? Can there be comedy, drama, tragedies?
I am sort of taking the approach that I'm willing to do many different styles.
Okay.
And I shape my librettos for the composer and for their music. And I remember writing a libretto and kind of sharing it with one of my composers. And he goes, well, I don't hear any music. I said, well, I didn't write it for you. And he goes, oh, do you do that? And I said, well, yeah. And so I will spend time listening through all of the music and kind of taking it in. And kind of talking to the composer in the direction that they want, and then you begin to shape it.
Okay, interesting, yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I want to talk about this incubation thing
yes,
here at Cape Town
exciting.
In a moment. But first of all, what is your first piece of music going to be, and why have you chosen it?
Oh, I chose What Will I Do Without Eurydice from Gluck's Orfeo and Eurydice. It's, to me... it's kind of the perfect opera. Everyone kind of like, what do you mean? It should be Marriage of Figaro. But Gluck was so inventive, where everyone was sort of deep into Baroque. I mean, it's a little period. But it's short, has dance. It is heart-wrenching. And this aria is heart-wrenching. It's a man dealing with the death of his wife, and how does he move on?
Yet you've chosen a countertenor
yes.
to sing it.
Yeah. I saw Jakub Olinsky at the San Francisco Opera, and they had created a production just for him, and it was magnificent, and I thought it was amazing.
Okay.
Yeah, and I just happen to like countertenors, and so countertenors are sort of integral to contemporary opera. And so we like them now.
Okay, they've come back.
They've come back around, right, and they're highly sought after. Depending upon the piece, I will talk a composer out of a countertenor.
Okay.
Because they're rare.
Let's listen to Gluck.
Thank you.
Music there by Gluck from his opera Orfeo and Eurydice. That aria was called What Will I Do Without Eurydice? And it is sung by Jakub Josef Gorlinski, the countertenor who really is quite a star, almost a pop star, isn't he, Alan?
It is, yeah.
Is he the one that does skateboarding?
He does. He does breakdancing.
Breakdancing, that's right.
And they usually find a way for him to dance or to breakdance.
On the stage when he does
these. That's what I saw when I saw the opera. They made space for that. It was fantastic. Yeah.
And he's good looking on
he
top of
He is very
it
good
all.
Looking, yes. That so goes a long way.
My guest is Alan Olenicek, who is the resident librettist, a new post here at Cape Town Opera. And Alan, I said to you, I wanted to find out more about Status or Staging Stories, an incubator for new South African opera. What does that all mean?
That was created last year. And it came out of a discussion with Mechthalina Menar about the state of South African opera, which is there's not much of it. And
you mean South African compositions?
Yes.
Not performing European operas?
Yeah, and that's just it. And so they perform European pieces, the occasional American piece. I've mentioned them as hand-me-down operas, which people take offense for. But
it's very rude. I
mean. It is very rude. Who would say that about Wagner?
Ooh,
but
yes.
Yes, but South Africans Cape Townians deserve their own operas and their own stories by their own artists. And I think that's very exciting. It's exciting to see the direction of what that looks like because it's already different than what you would find in the United States or Europe.
Have you started work yet?
We did. So we did work last year.
And oh, you've been here before?
Oh, yes. I was here last year.
Oh, okay.
And we worked with six playwrights. So I worked with another librettist, and we mentored. We taught them online classes, and then we mentored them through an opera libretto because sometimes you have to be sort of worked through a libretto. And very often you'll go through many, many drafts of the outline before you even put a word on the page because it needs to get right. So two of those were picked up and in development. And then this year I mentored three and incredible writers and
South African,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And exciting. Yeah.
But now, apart from that, and I'll come back to that, you have been working as well on The Cunning Little Vixen.
I have.
Which is showing
So last year, I was actually in Paris, and I saw The Cunning Little Vixen at Paris Opera. And I remember sitting and just, like, smiling through the whole thing. I thought, oh, my God, this is delightful, but kind of clunky. So Janáček wrote his own libretto.
Oh, did he as well?
He did. He had sort of these scenes of humans, and that was quite dark. And then had these delightful scenes in the forest. And I thought, oh, I'd like to take a stab at this. So I talked to Magdalena. I remember walking down the stairs. And by the time we got to the end of the steps, she's like, "Yes, let's do it." I said, "I want to rewrite it for families and for children, and lean into what the story is essentially about, which is the cycle of life and the beauty of nature." And
So she agreed. So you chucked out basically Janáček's libretto, and put your own libretto in.
Yes. And so I had to pull out those scenes and then stitch it back together, and make it child friendly because it's not like.
But it should be child friendly, especially that opera to do with the birds and the bees and the forests and
one
the trees.
One would think, but if you actually look at the actual. His original libretto. They're swearing.
My goodness me, not swearing.
Yes. Yeah, which had, it's kind of funny.
Yes,
you know, to
yes.
see that. But I thought, well, we'll school children don't need to hear that.
And presumably in English.
All in English. Yes. Yeah.
And you're the wrong person to ask, but do you think it worked?
I was beside myself. I was so delighted, and the kids like cheered and laughed, and they were absolutely delighted, and. I was filled with pride, and they did such a beautiful job.
Okay. Yeah. So now, here you are, and how long are you here in Cape Town?
I am here until Sunday. Yeah, so I'm here for the run, and then I go back home. So,
but then what about librettist in residence? Does that not mean you have to be here for a year?
All time? No, no. So I am officially the librettist in residence for 26 and 27, and so I can work remotely.
Oh, of course
and,
you can.
And really, yeah. Writers now can work anywhere in the world. Like, you don't have to move to New York or move to London.
So these days.
These days, yeah. I mean, I usually have to thankfully, I'm an early riser. So when I have my meetings with Cape Town Opera, it's at 6 o'clock in the morning or 5:30.
Oh,
and they're
right.
Like, that's brutal. I'm like, I'm usually up at 5. So if you don't mind me with a cup of coffee.
But you're 6 hours behind us, aren't you, or something, or 7 hours behind us?
I think 7 hours behind,
seven,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So 6 o'clock in the morning for you would be midnight for us.
4 o'clock in the afternoon.
4 o'clock in the afternoon. So I'm going the wrong way.
Yeah.
4 o'clock in the afternoon. That's true. So, but now when you say it's an incubator where you're training, working with composers, doing all that online, teaching, working with them, it's all online.
It's all online. And some of it is just learning the mechanics, not the mechanics, but the craft and the structure of libretto writing. And so again, they come, they're already very talented playwrights, but playwrights, it's, and you certainly in plays, you can play with time, but opera, it is about time and the suspension of time.
Very much so.
And so it speeds and slows and it speeds and suspends and then moves again. And so you have to play with that between aria and recit. And it's not like, oh, this is a monologue. Well, arias do kind of work as a monologue, but they are different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. I've never thought of an aria as a monologue, but I suppose, well, especially in Wagner, where there are not really any arias as such.
Yeah.
You could say they're all monologues.
Yeah, they're all monologues.
But they are somehow musically so riveting.
Yeah, arias exist in the head.
Yes, yes, yes.
And they time is slowed or stopped. Yeah.
I want to know about your next piece of music, Hymn to the Sun from Philip Glass's opera, Akhenaten.
Yes. Yeah. It was funny. I started out singing in opera choruses, opera choruses. So that's how I fell in love. And so I only sang the big war horse operas with Atlanta Opera and the Florentine Opera in Milwaukee. So I sang a lot of Puccini and Verdi. And then I heard Philip Glass was in college. I was like, what is this? And I completely sort of fell in love with it. And again, it has another countertenor. But it sort of made sense to the character. And
what are we listening to?
Yeah, this is the hymn
what happens?
This is the Hymn to the Sun. And it sort of is midway through the point. And it's a prayer to the sun. Akhenaten changed from the many gods of the Egyptian sort of pantheon to a single god, Aten. Uh-huh. And it is him praying to his god that he basically created.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's listen. Thank you. That's music by Philip Glass from his opera Akhenaten, and that was called Hymn to the Sun. It was the second choice of my guest on People of Note this week, Alan Olenicek, who's coming all the way from San Francisco as librettist in residence here at Cape Town Opera. A first in the world of opera, certainly for us here in Cape Town, Alan. You mentioned just now that you sang in opera. Has music always been... Tell me about your background. How did you get involved in this mad world of opera in the first place?
Well, I fell into it. And so singing in opera choruses was sort of a part-time job in college, so I made a little bit of money. But then I went on to become a sommelier.
Oh, really?
Yeah, at the Ritz-Carlton.
No wonder you liked going to Stellenbosch and Franschhoek.
I did, yes. I decided I wanted to do something important instead of something impressive, and then I became a special educator for 16 years. And then...
What is a special educator? You mean for children with special needs?
Yes, yes. And I worked particularly with children with dyslexia. And then I left because it was time, and then I became a playwright and got absolutely no traction. But what I did learn is how to write plays, and I was putting in my 10,000 hours of writing, and then it's just sort of lend itself to opera.
Okay. And, had you written before? Did you discover that you had a talent for writing?
No, not at all. I went to go see a play in development by Lauren Gunderson, and I thought, oh, I should give this a try. How hard can it be?
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard to get right.
But, Alan, you've done such a lot and in some exotic places as well. There's a list here of the many things you've done, names I don't recognize, and, you know, all sorts of things in the Arctic. And
Yes. I was invited twice
Iceland.
With the Arctic Circle Residency. And it's an international residency, and they put you on a boat with other artists, and you sail the Arctic. And the idea is that as artists, you respond to this very special place, this very fragile place. And when I was there the first time, I wrote a play called Helt Texas, which was picked up by a producer.
Is an opera we're talking about?
No, it's a straight-up play.
A play, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and so it's London-based. And he's like, why are you writing for opera? You should always be writing for audio dramas, which is its own thing. And then this time I started out as a song cycle. And then I was working with two other visual artists. And the visuals were so incredible. I thought from an audience perspective, singing, music, moving, it's taken too much. So we just left my words, the poetry behind. And so...
So poetry obviously is an important part of your writing because of the nature of being of a libretto.
Yeah, yeah. Libretto writing, the language should be poetical, but not poetry.
Yes. As you said earlier, not too flowery.
You cannot be too flowery.
Yeah,
and in fact, you want phrasing to be short. You want to keep to one and two syllable words. You want to have words that are very clear. You want words with as many open vowels
yes.
as you possibly can.
Yes.
English is not an easy language to sing or to understand. And so you want to help the audience along.
Mm-hmm.
And the richer the language, it's like eating cheesecake. And it gets richer and richer, and it gets to be too much. And you see, and I've seen audiences react to beautiful plush writing, and then they're just staring down at their shoes because they've stopped taking in the story.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
it's between the music and the lush language, you can get lost.
Sometimes, and I have one person I said this to thought I was mad, but sometimes I think there should be surtitles for English operas because it is difficult to understand
yeah,
very
and,
often.
And not only that, but not everybody's got. Good hearing.
Yes, exactly.
And so you, by not having super titles, you're excluding people from the experience.
Yeah.
Well, we should be including everybody into opera, and that means helping people that are...
And an opera that's very... Peter Grimes, for example.
Mm, one of my favorite operas.
You must know what every word is in context with every note you're hearing.
Yeah.
And by contrast, once again, you'll also discover that I like Gilbert and Sullivan compared to Wagner. We've just had The Pirates of Penzance here.
Which is delightful.
And the person with whom I went said she didn't know the opera at all, but said that she wished there were titles. What do you call them? Super titles.
We call
them surtitles.
Yeah.
To listen to all that wonderful writing of Gilbert,
yeah,
and the way Sullivan fitted it in those Pattersons.
Yeah.
So I sometimes think surtitles could be used for English as well.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of lends itself to lazy writing because you're like, oh, well, they'll figure it out because of the super titles.
Oh, that's a thought.
Yeah. Well,
no, but surely not.
But no. You it needs to be clear.
Yeah.
You should be able to close your eyes and listen, and it should make sense. And so I think that's lazy if you're like, well, they'll just pick it up on the super titles.
Right.
It should be clear words and clear text setting.
It's very confusing when you go to an opera, say, in Germany, and it's an Italian Mozart opera, and the surtitles are in Italian. I mean, in German, because it's Italian, if you see what I mean, and then you're completely lost as an English speaker.
I think it
speaker.
Should be in the language of the audience, and not everybody agrees.
Oh, okay.
But I think... You don't want to create barriers to entry.
Mm-hmm.
And if you say, oh, this is going to be in German, you already feel, well, I'm going to be lost. I'm going to feel stupid. And that's not what you want. You want audiences to come in and feel relaxed and the stories are accessible.
Right.
And
but you also have to do your homework. If you're going to go and see a Ring Cycle, you certainly need to do your homework.
Correct.
If you don't have surtitles, which at Bayreuth, obviously you don't.
Yeah.
And the three rings I've seen were all in Germany, Nuremberg, Wiesbaden, and Bayreuth. No surtitles. You need to know what you're doing. Alan, tell me about your next piece, because I want to talk about Così fan tutte.
Yes.
And things you are doing to this famous Mozart opera.
Yes.
But let's hear the aria first.
Yes, absolutely.
What are we listening to?
It's known as Love is a Thief, but it's Dorabella.
Uh-huh.
And
let's listen to it first.
I'll let you
we'll
know
talk
what
about
I think
it
about it. Yes.
Thank you.
music of Mozart from Così fan tutte, Love is a Thief, and a choice of my guest here on People of Note on Fine Music Radio, brought to you by Peter Turin Productions. And my guest is Alan Olenicek,
yes,
who has just been appointed librettist in residence here in Cape Town. And you've really, we see your work with The Cunning Little Vixen,
yes,
which is on. Now, we that Così fan tutte, I read somewhere that you've recently worked on it, as you did with The Cunning Little Vixen, and changed it.
It changed it.
Translated it into English, but more changes.
Yes. So, you know, I had this meeting, and I thought, I hoped that they would give me a commission. And I thought, oh God, whatever they do, let it not be Mozart or Così fan tutte, who is my least favorite opera.
Really, Così fan tutte.
Yeah, it's a stupid story that's offensive and sexist.
Which happens a lot.
And Mozart lavished the greatest music in opera on this, and so it's very frustrating because you want to hate it, but you cannot because the music is so extraordinary.
Yeah.
And so, sure enough, they. Nicholas Garcia from Pocket Opera asked, oh, would you be willing to tackle this? But let's cut it down to an hour and a half. I said, can we cut the rest of it? He goes, absolutely. And let's have a brand new story where the women are not foolish. And
oh, even changing the story.
Oh, it's a completely different story.
Oh, my.
Because the story as it stands, well, certainly to an American audience, would be kind of it's offensive. It's cringy.
Okay.
And so
I never thought of that.
Oh,
I should look at the libretto more carefully next time.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, the title is All Women Are Like That.
Yes.
Yes. So
So what did you do? Can you give us any little clues?
Sure. And so
just for interest, because so many people know that opera.
Yeah. And I would say if you love that opera and you love Mozart, you would be horrified with what I'm doing.
Oh.
But this is not for those opera people. It's for people that have never been to the opera but want to experience Mozart, and they want something fun, and they don't want to sit through a 3.5-hour opera. And
goodness,
yeah, it's a big undertaking, and so it's sort of leaning into what audiences want. And
but do you still have? Sorry, Adam. Mm. Did you still have the women wondering if their men really love them?
No,
oh, that's all changed.
That's all changed.
And
yeah,
all the
I don't
lies
want to give too much away. But we've leaned into it. It's set in the 80s in South Beach, Miami.
Oh my!
And it's sort of leaning into dirty, rotten scoundrels and a fish named Wanda. So it's a whole other kind of comedy. And I would take like this aria is completely different. So it's actually by the Despina character, but it's sung by a countertenor this time, and he's talking about something completely different. And so you have to take the aria, take out all the words, and then create another set of meaning that still matches the music.
The music, exactly.
Yeah.
And great music, as you said earlier.
It's incredible music. But, you know, Mozart, it was not like the Janáček, which sort of wrote itself because it's a lot of arioso. Here is so many repeats, so many notes, so many changing dynamics. And so just because you have the words doesn't mean it always fits. And so it's not my favorite piece, but it's now stuck in my head.
Uh-huh.
And I cannot get rid of it.
So now the question is, will you bring it out here? Will you speak to Magdalene Minard?
She's very interested because she loves
your libretto.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, she's interested.
Yeah, yeah. We'll
Let's
see.
Hold thumbs. That would be great to see that. Because I agree with you, it is a ridiculous story, as so often happens with opera, incidentally.
Yeah, and it's of its time.
But the music is so unbelievable.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll look out for that.
Yes.
Because there, Alan, you were doing it the other way around, as you said earlier.
Yes.
You had the music.
Yes.
Great music. And now you've got to fit the words to
now
it.
Now you have to fit the words to it. And I'm new to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, it's quite a challenge because, you know, you're looking for, yes, those open vowels, but you're also, you have to get the correct stanchion. It needs to map correctly to the music.
Oh, yeah,
You want to avoid ugly vowels like a short I, you know,
Yeah.
Nobody wants to hear that.
No.
And so, so it's a whole other skill that I am learning and enjoying because it's a puzzle.
Have you, just from a purely translation point of view, have you done much of that work where you've translated an opera word for word into English? Or do you always use your, if you are working, it's always your libretto, not someone else's, not a Verdi into English? Or
No, I worked on with Opera Orlando, we worked on Beatrice and Benedict, which is a Berlioz opera.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we, that was very close to the French. But when, you know, Berlioz or even Mozart, when you hear things for the fourth time, you're like, well, this is, it's a lot of repeats. And so you have to kind of keep coming up with new things.
So you've cut out repeats, have you?
Yeah.
Making a note here. Alan, let's have another piece of music. I see now we've got Tchaikovsky.
Yeah.
Tell me the story about this and why you've chosen it.
Yeah, so I wrote a play about, it's called Concerto, and it premiered with Lyric Theater of Oklahoma. And it was about the first violin concerto, but more it was about Tchaikovsky, his patron, Van Meck, and then his protege, his lover, Josef Kotek.
Kotek, yeah.
And so it had lots of music. And I wrote it with lots of music, but then the maestro from the Philharmonic came in and he helped shape it and bring in more music. But this is one of the pieces that I've picked, and it's beautiful, and it's relatively simple, and was written for the home, which is, you know, Tchaikovsky wrote for the stage primarily.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a piano piece that sort of sings and breathes.
It's beautiful. It's the Barcarolle from June.
Yeah.
So just in the case I misunderstood you, did you set this to words?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
It's just a piece that I love.
Thank you.
the Bach Roll Movement, which depicts June in the Seasons by Tchaikovsky, a piano suite there. And it was another choice of my guest, Alan Olenicek, who is the librettist in residence here in Cape Town. But talking about residencies, it seems you mentioned that they are important to you because you have been to some fairly exotic places where I thought they wouldn't be opera.
Yeah. I actually had my first one last month in Washington, D.C. Oh. But which is, yeah. But I've been to Nepal and Sardinia. I've been to the Arctic twice. I was the artist in residence for Volcano National Park. And I worked on things there. And yeah.
Your London-based company features your plays Next of Kin and Hell Texas. You've mentioned those, haven't you? Those are the straight plays.
Those are the straight plays.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Now, why would you say a residency is important to you? Because I would think you would want to get settled in a place. Or for you, is it better to move around like that?
It kind of breaks your rhythm. Mm-hmm. And you're right. And then, you know, I would take long walks through the forest in Volcano National Park and kind of clear your head. And you come back to it.
Or the ice of the Arctic.
Or the Arctic or Iceland.
Iceland,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And do you speak any other languages?
I do not. I used to sing in other languages, but I do not.
It's always easier to sing
in other languages. It's always easier. Google Translate.
Yeah. So with all these things and with all the work that you've done, they've mostly actually been residences, haven't they?
Yes. Yeah. So this is my first official artist in residence
because
for
as you
a
said,
company.
As you said right at the beginning, it's a first.
It's a first.
To have a resident librettist.
Yeah. And actually, you know, Magdalena was like, what do you mean other companies don't have it? I said, no. I said, no, they don't.
Well, it was brave of her to appoint you.
Well, yeah. And it also shows how forward-thinking they are and how inventive they are and sort of their commitment to supporting South African artists. And eventually, the hope is that a South African librettist will be the next librettist in residence for the company.
Now, you said that you are leaving in a few days to go back to the States, but then you do things online and so on. But how long will you be the librettist in residence for Cape Town Opera?
I've been invited for 26 and 27.
Oh, the 2 years, 2 years.
Yeah.
Lots of work in front of you.
Yeah.
What do you do now when you get back? So you're going to work with people here online as librettists in residence.
Yeah.
And you get back to San Francisco in a few days' time, and then?
I will continue my work on the Così Fan Tutte adaptation.
Oh, is that still ongoing?
Yes, it's ongoing. They're not in a rush to get it, and it's just very, very time-consuming. Because it's nitpicky things, you know, finding every syllable to match.
And
you have to
amazing.
Do that manually, yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I guess every composer does that, but yeah.
Do you play an instrument at all?
I do not.
It was your voice that, in the first place, got you into
writing
and to singing in opera. Mm. Do you have a favorite opera? There you are.
Off the top of my head, it would be Peter Grimes.
Oh, that is interesting.
It's
a remarkable piece.
It's remarkable. And
we've had it here in Cape Town.
Yeah.
But I just think it is, of all the Benjamin Britten operas, I think it's the most extraordinary.
And I tell other
In concept, let alone the music.
Yeah. And I tell other librettists who want to get into it, I'm like, don't study Verdi, don't study. Like, study Benjamin Britten and his operas because, you know, they are. They're incredible.
Well, the way he used the language with the music that he wrote.
Absolutely.
From his libretto, it's extraordinary. I'm going to have to let you go now, but not before you've chosen another piece of music. And I see you've chosen something from The Cunning Little Vixen, but presumably this is the original, Janáček's original.
It is in the original in Czech. And so it's the Forester aria, and it's what ends the opera. And it's the forester who opens it, ends it, and it sort of talks about his life and the nature, the cycle of nature. And it's a beautiful piece. And Janáček was so taken with it, he asked for it to be played at his funeral.
Oh, this very aria. Mm,
yeah.
Oh, that is interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you, Anne. It's been interesting talking to you. I don't think I've, well, I've never interviewed a librettist in residence ever before. So you're a first.
Thank you.
And enjoy your stay in Cape Town and
yes.
enjoy your wine. Do you still taste wine? I mean, as a sommelier, it's different.
Yes.
But still, you know what you're
yes.
talking about.
Yes. Like, as far as what is the newest wine, I don't know. But I certainly have a cellar, and that I collect wine and certainly enjoy wine, yeah.
Okay, well, there you go. What a combination.
What a combination.
My guest has been Alan Olenicek, and we're going to end with this aria from Act 3 of The Cunning Little Vixen, the Forester aria. Alan, thank you, and best of luck. Keep in touch with us.
Thank you so much.
Bring Cosi fan tutte here.
Yes.
Okay.
Can I say so? Bright as a new tin soldier, chestnut brown mushroom cap, like a girl I knew. Is it true or just a story? Silver fur, he like a dark leaf tide. We two were gathering mushrooms, but we crushed the best ones underfoot because we couldn't see. Love made us blind to the world. But the kisses, oh, the kisses we to lovers gathered. We were young and newly married. God, yes, we were young and newly weren't for the flies, a man could fall asleep in a moment. And yet I am just before leaving, the sun breaks out. Here it is always lovely. The woods, new life is stirring, and the joyous wood nymphs come running back to their homes at the first sign of springtime. And Lord, greeting each other, once again with tears of joy.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.